first things first, I'm Jen Wolf. That is Nick Wright. That is Chris Candy in for Chris Carter, because we can only swap one Chris for another Chris.
Candy.
It's still CC.
It is still CC, and it's great to have you, and we appreciate you spending the morning with us. We appreciate you spending the morning with us. We have got a big program today. Tom Brady is climbing back up the quarterback ranks. The 49ers might be trying to trade for OBJ, but after a sluggish 3-5 start, it seemed no one but Jerry Jones had this team making a big playoff run. Since then, Cowboys got a receiver. They shored up a great defense. They're now preparing for their playoff game against Seattle on Saturday. The Seahawks beat Dallas earlier this season. But again, that feels like it was about 38 million years ago. Here's Ezekiel Elliott on his mindset entering the playoffs.
Just knowing, you know, going into these playoffs, I'm going to have probably the heaviest workload I've had all season. So great getting fresh and ready going into this last stretch of the season, ready for whatever they throw at me. It's hard to make the playoffs in the NFL. And that makes the moment that much more important. But, I live for these moments. I love it. Can't wait to go out there and compete Saturday night. And I think this team is ready.
All right, Chris, let's break this down a little bit. How did Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys match up against Seattle?
Well, Ezekiel Elliott is the guy that stirs the drink for that Dallas Cowboys offense, and he was able to get some rest in Week 17 because the Cowboys took care of the division in Week 16 in their win over the Bucs. So the fact that Zeke is fresh, and he said as much when he was addressing the media yesterday, he said it usually takes him till Friday or Saturday to get ready for a game, to feel like he's ready, but he feels ready now.
Yeah.
I think that week off is really going to pay dividends for the Dallas Cowboys. But in terms of the X's and O's, I mean, this is one of those situations where the Cowboys are going to have to run against a loaded box. We're talking about 8 and 9 man fronts. The Seattle Seahawks, that's what they do. They're in an 8-man front or more over 30% of the time, which is third in the National Football League. That's a huge percentage. So, I mean, the Dallas Cowboys are going to have to find ways to be efficient in the run game, even when they don't have the most favorable looks. But also, your quarterback is going to have to make some plays down the field. And I think that was the impetus for Jason Garrett to make sure that Dak Prescott did play in Week 17 when they had nothing to play for against the New York Giants. And Dak Prescott played really well. That was a confidence builder, especially with some of the looks that the Giants presented to Dak Prescott. A lot of split safety looks, which is not the easiest for the passing game, but he was able to extend plays and make plays down the field. Blake Jarwin, Cole Beasley. I mean, you saw that. And so the fact that he's going to have that performance to draw on for confidence, I think that bodes well for the Dallas Cowboys.
I want to stay on Zeke for a moment. I agree with everything you said about Dak. All week I've said it was the most meaningless game I've ever seen because of what it allows Dak to go into the playoffs feeling. Defense is having to see, like, oh, now we got to account for Blake Jarwin somehow. Like, all of that was good. But for Zeke, he's going to be the best player in this game, not named Russell Wilson. He's going to be the most important player in this game, not named Russell Wilson. And what we've seen from the Cowboys, you mentioned they started 3-5. Since then, they're 7-1. We can throw out the Week 17 because Zeke didn't play it. In those seven games where they went 6-1, locked up the division in that stretch, 29 touches a game and 160 yards from scrimmage per game. He has been dominant. Their most important game of the year, the game that would have flipped the division one way or another, the overtime win against Philly. People remember Amari had a huge game. He had the 3 touchdowns. Zeke in that game, 40 touches, 40, 192 yards from scrimmage. Every single game in this stretch, he's had at least 23 touches. He's had at least 110 yards from scrimmage. An average game for him is the game against Atlanta, 30 for 201, or against Indy in a loss, 25 for 128. He has been a workhorse, and now he's fresh. That is the Cowboys' path to victory. Yes, they're going to have to make a couple big plays. There's going to have to be a couple times that they have 9 in the box. They say, you know what? Amari Cooper, single high safety, or maybe no safety if it's a zero blitz. You know, we are taking our shot to a guy we traded first round pick for. But they're going to have to take those shots because they're in second and short because Zeke got him 8 yards on first down. Zeke has to be dominant. Like that is, and the Seahawks have been excellent in the last 6 weeks of football against the run particularly. This is going to have to be one of those situations where the other team knows what we're going to do, but we're going to do it anyway because Tyron Smith should be fresh.
Yes.
Zach Martin should be fresh. The offensive line should be as fresh and as good as it's been all year, should be the healthiest it's been all year, aside from Travis Frederick, obviously. Let's see if they can impose their will because that's the way they win this playoff game.
I've sat next to you for the last 6-7 weeks talking about the Cowboys, and not once have we had a segment where we just talk about how important Zeke is. We've talked about Dak. We've talked about that O-line. We've talked about the defense. Are we almost taking Zeke for granted? I mean, yes, he has to be perfect, but he's been that great the last – I mean, he's the one thing you can absolutely count on this Cowboys team. Is there any doubt going against Seattle that he won't be?
No, I don't have any doubt that Zeke won't have a good performance against the Seattle Seahawks. Now, what I am worried about is that Dallas Cowboys defensive front seven going up against that Seattle rushing attack. I mean, because Seattle is just gashing people. They're number one in rushing in the NFL for a reason. That zone scheme is hard to stop. And then, of course, you can't account for Russell Wilson when he goes off script and he's able to create with his legs. So I think that Dallas Cowboys defense is going to have to step up. I can't ignore the fact that they got gashed by the Indianapolis Colts back in week 15. Mm-hmm. I mean, they rung up over 170 yards rushing with Marlon Mack. Yeah. And so when you start talking about Chris Carson and that Seattle Seahawks run game, I think the Dallas Cowboys front seven has got their work cut out for them. So I think it's going to be important for the Dallas Cowboys offensively to sustain drives, to be good on third downs. And that's not necessarily something that they've been great against playoff caliber teams.
Sure.
So I think that's something that we have to keep an eye on. The Dallas Cowboys offense being able to help their defense out by sustaining drives and keeping those guys off the field.
The number one rush offense is playing in this game. It's not the team with Zeke. It's Seattle. And what they've done since week four, 12 of 13 games, they've had at least 150 on the ground. They've averaged 177 on the ground at over 5 yards per carry. It has been the Ravens have gotten a lot of attention as of late since Lamar was added to the lineup for being so run heavy. Seattle's been a lighter version of that all year long, which is interesting because in the previous few years, ever since Marshawn Lynch left, that had been their issue, was they couldn't establish a run. They couldn't run block, and they didn't have the personnel to do it. They thought they addressed it in the first round this year with Rashad Penny. He's been a healthy scratch most of the season. It's been Chris Carson who's been the bell cow for them. The Cowboys' front's going to have to be great, or else Seattle's going to have 12-play, 7-minute, 82-yard drives. They're going to have long drives that shorten the game, and Seattle feels great if it's a close game with Russell Wilson in the fourth quarter. Like, that is there has been their recipe to get into the postseason. To get to your point, Jenna, one of the reasons that we have taken Zeke as a given is he's been a given.
Right.
Since he, at Ohio State, he was a given. His rookie year, he wins the rushing title. Last year, he rushes more yards per game than any player in the league. The only reason he doesn't win the rushing title is the suspension. This year, he's yards per game, the best in the league. Again, like Ezekiel Elliott is the best runner of the football in the NFL. And that's with a healthy or unhealthy offensive line.
But you know who isn't a given is his quarterback, Dak Prescott. You brought that up earlier. Before we go to break, talk a little bit about how much pressure is on Dak Prescott to pick up where Week 17 ended and a few games prior.
Well, there's going to be a lot of pressure on Dak Prescott just because he has not won a playoff game. I know 2 years ago they had the number one seed in the NFC and they lost in the divisional round to the Green Bay Packers. So even though they're at home again in the postseason, they're going up against a head coach and quarterback combination that you have to say you trust more than the Dallas Cowboys have in place right now with Jason Garrett and Dak Prescott. So, I mean, it's a situation where there's going to be some pressure. Dak is going to feel the intensity of the playoffs, especially in this particular matchup where everybody is saying that you have a team from a talent standpoint that should be able to take care of the Seattle Seahawks at home.
I hope someone told Dak this week to watch that playoff game against the Packers because he was extraordinary. That was the capstone of his amazing rookie season.
He was good in the second half of that
absolutely.
Game. Okay.
Let's keep it in mind. Yeah. In the first half, the whole Cowboys offense
They had a double-digit deficit going into the second half.
Right, but that's kind of to my point. He was down double digits in a playoff game against Aaron Rodgers, and they were there at the end. It took a 50-plus yard curving field goal to beat him. He was so good in the second half of that game. Remind Dak, you can do this. I don't know that I believe it, but make him believe it. You can do this in the biggest game of your life. You went toe-to-toe with Aaron Rodgers, almost played him to a draw. That could maybe add to the competence he built on in that Giants game last week.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, could the Giants really move on from Odell Beckham? That's the rumor. Nobody loves a rumor more than I do. That's next on First Things First. On Saturday, it's a big showdown in Dallas as Russell Wilson and the Seahawks take on Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys in the NFC wildcard game. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, Saturday on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Time for us to go viral on First Things First. Check out this video Lonzo Ball put on his Instagram story on his way to work. Ran into teammate Lance Stephenson in traffic. Gotta love LA traffic.
And then just pulled off on him. Same exact thing
but
happened
look at
to
Lance.
Me. I was driving through New Jersey, I'm not gonna say where, and I drive up on this iced out Bentley and I'm like, whose could that be? And I look. And it's my man Chris Canny rocking to
Come
some Indigo
man.
Girls.
Come on, man. Stop it. No, you didn't see all that.
Did you hear you were rocking out too?
I heard.
Yes, the Indigo Girls.
That's how you
tell
can,
me what
that's
album.
That's how you know his story ain't true, Jenna.
Well, maybe listen,
that's how you know it's not true.
Maybe I got the album wrong. I don't know. I just know Canny was doing like air guitar, little air drums.
No, Nick. No, that's a nice try. You dribble, you shoot, you go for the best. But no, not on that one.
I'm just telling you what I saw. No. Maybe it was a different 6'9" black guy with a Bentley in Jersey. I don't know.
Oh, you could tell I'm 6'9" while I'm in the car.
What? Absolutely. Oh, okay. Yeah, right. Okay. You were wearing a uniform. Said see Canty.
Time for stories to start your morning. Last night, Kawhi Leonard dropped a career-high 45 against the Utah Jazz. He went 16 of 22 from the field. He made 13 free throws. Nick, how impressive was Kawhi last night?
Kawhi was spectacular. Shot 73% from the field. It was a Kobe Bryant memorial stat line. Yep. 45 points, one assist in the game. Kawhi doing it on both ends for a team that's been, without question, one of the three best teams in the league thus far. The shocking thing to, I think, a lot of people is just Kawhi's third career 40-point game. Mm-hmm. He has, dozens of games in the mid-30s, but hasn't been able to crack that 40-point 40-point mark much last night's career high.
Well, I don't think he's ever been in a position as a player to have to do that. He had a better supporting cast in San Antonio in terms of guys that can score the basketball at a high clip. In Toronto, they're asking him to do more of that in terms of being a scorer, and we all know he's got the tools to get it done.
He's been so good this year, all year long.
It's moving on to the Lakers now. LeBron has been ruled out for tonight's game against the Thunder. This will be the fourth game that he's missed since injuring his groin last week. Lakers are 1-2 without the Kings so far. Nick, how does the team look without LeBron?
I mean, they've had two games that came down to the very end. They won one, they lost one. They had one game they didn't play well at all. They've been okay. I thought the last game they played where they closed it out well was a great confidence builder. Brandon Ingram played one of his best games of the season. After this Thunder game, they get the Knicks at home, then at Minnesota, at Dallas. I thought he was going to miss 3 to 5 games. Now seems more likely it's going to be closer to 5 to 8 games. We'll see how the Lakers do in this stretch.
Yeah, they just need to give LeBron James as much time as he needs to get healthy from that groin and be 100%, because you don't want this to be something that's lingering throughout the regular season. And with all the parity in the West, with everybody being right there, you know, 4 or 5 games of each other, you've got time to be able to let LeBron James heal up. So you need to be patient with that.
All right, moving on. Last night, Urban Meyer coached his last game for Ohio State in the Rose Bowl win over Washington. Quarterback Dwayne Haskins put on a show. Tossed 3 touchdowns, threw for 251 yards. Our own Chris Carter was there. He tweeted that he's certain Haskins is heading to the NFL. Kenny, what'd you make of Haskins' night yesterday?
Well, I mean, a lot of people were talking about Haskins potentially being the number one pick, and I only think he solidified that in that performance in the Rose Bowl. This is a chance for a national audience to be able to see his skill set on display against Washington, and I think that he showed out. I mean, you can see that he's got a live arm. He can make all the throws, but the thing that's most impressive to me is his poise in the pocket. And you can tell that whatever stage he's on, it's not going to be too big for him. To me, because there's always a demand for a quarterback, and he seems like he is the clear-cut number one quarterback of this upcoming class, if he declares, I think Dwayne Haskins showed why he should be the number one overall pick.
The only knock on him is lack of experience, that he only a one-year redshirt sophomore with only 1 year starting. I can't remember a player who improved their draft stock more over the final quarter of a season. Like, the Maryland game, which shouldn't have been as close as it was, but he brought them back in that game, was spectacular. He whooped Michigan. The Big Ten championship game, he was great. And yesterday, Ohio State won this game after the third quarter. He didn't make hardly any mistakes through the first three quarters. With Justin Herbert going back to school, who else would be the top quarterback taken? If he is going to be the number one pick, though, you think that means Arizona is going to be trading the pick to a team?
Oh, no doubt. Arizona's not giving up on Josh Rosen. I'm just saying that somebody is going to trade up number one just because you don't have a lot of options in this quarterback class.
He's the top quarterback on the board.
All right, let's move on to the Giants now. It's hard to pull a ton of positives out of this season for them. They finished the year with 5 wins. It was 2 more than wins than the year before, so that's a positive, I guess. Odell Beckham Jr. had an up-and-down year, battling both an aging quarterback and an injured quad. Reports today, the 49ers would be interested in taking him if the Giants were willing to move him. Nick, should Big Blue listen to trade offers for OBJ?
I'm going to say same thing here I said with Antonio Brown, but for different reasons. Mm. Of course you should listen. Of course you should listen. Amari Cooper got a first-round pick. Khalil Mack got 2 first-round picks. Odell Beckham Jr., with cost certainty, you know what the contract is, and the signing bonus has been paid. So he actually would be making around on a per-year basis like Sammy Watkins money.
Yep.
And so it's actually a good contract. Even with the coming off an injury and suffering an injury that cost him last quarter of the season, he had over 1,000 yards receiving and at times looked like the best quarterback on the Giants in addition to the best wide receiver on the Giants. Everyone should be interested in Odell. And if you're the Giants, you do have to look at the world through this lens. Eli's probably your quarterback again next year. Mm-hmm. When Odell signed that extension, he knew it was one more year of Eli. He got sick of Eli 3 games into it. And then he sat down next to high out of his mind Lil Wayne and Josina Anderson and aired him out. Like, what version of Odell are you going to get if next year the quarterback room is Kyle LaLeta and Eli Manning? And that the team is once again stuck in this neutral? I don't know. So would I be in a rush to trade him? No. Would I listen to offers? Would 2 first-round picks get the job done? Absolutely.
No, you have to listen to offers. That just makes sense. You got to do due diligence if you're Dave Gettleman, their general manager. But when you consider where the Giants are at, I think they're going to be stuck in this rut, being a 5-11, 6-10, 7-9, 8-8 team until they figure out who's going to be the successor for Eli Manning at the quarterback position. So if you tell me they're going to trade Odell for some type of package that includes some high draft picks in order to then use that to move up in the draft to get a quarterback, that would make sense. The only thing I would say to that is the Giants are in win-now mode with a roster that's not a win-now roster. They don't have the depth on both sides of the ball to compete for a championship, but you used the 2nd overall pick last year in a running back. And when you draft a running back, as soon as he steps on an NFL field is when his prime is. So you're talking about having Saquon Barkley this productive, 2,000 yards from scrimmage for the next 7 or 8 seasons, and yet you don't know who your quarterback is going to be. So that's why I worry about the Giants getting rid of a playmaker the caliber of Odell when they have Saquon Barkley on that team. You can take full advantage of what Saquon Barkley brings to the table when you have a guy outside the numbers at receiver in Odell Beckham Jr. that dictates fronts and coverages. If you trade him away, all of a sudden life gets a lot harder for Saquon Barkley. And I don't know that that's where you want to be if you're the Giants and still not seemingly knowing who's going to be your quarterback.
Nick, explain this to me. If they are in win now, they have their running back, they have their wide receiver if they want it. Yes, they need to work a little bit on their defense. Why not just pull the trigger, make the move at quarterback? What are we all sort of waiting for? How could he be your win-now guy?
The problem is there's no, like, I don't mean to be, like, flippant, but there's no quarterback tree. Where are they getting this guy from? They won too many games to get the number one pick.
Yes.
So if they are going to move up from, I think they're 6?
They're 6.
If they're going to move up from 6 to 1, like Canny thinks you would have to do, certainly move into the top 3 to get Dwayne Haskins, well, that's going to cost you at least 1 future first-round pick. And you said, I know their defense isn't that good. That is, their defense is a glaring weakness. Even if Eli was good this year, this Giants team would have topped out at 9 or 10 wins because the defense was really bad. Mm-hmm. This is the argument for trading Odell. The argument for trading Odell is, listen, we need to draft a quarterback. We need 3 playmakers on defense. We don't have enough draft capital. Go get it. Our defense is expensive and old. We are in a rebuild. Just because, let's not compound the error of not drafting a quarterback by doubling down on what is clearly not the correct strategy. Even if you can't get the quarterback this year, let's just say that the Cardinals want 3 first-round picks to move up to number 1, and you say, I don't want to do it. You still can make the argument that starting the rebuild now, getting extra picks into the future that can then allow you next year to get a quarterback is the right decision. I think Odell's a great player. I think he is unfairly scrutinized in a lot of ways. I also think that a team that has a superstar running back and a superstar wide receiver, and that's it for their B quality players and above, tops out at 8 wins.
Yep.
Like, I've seen this happen before. I've seen teams with Hall of Famers at those spots not be great teams because they can't fill out the rest of the roster. I would listen to it. And if I'm San Francisco, by the way, on the other side of this, it's a huge year for everyone there. Mm-hmm. For John Lynch, for Kyle Shanahan, for Jimmy Garoppolo. And you can't have George Kittle as your number one option. So, like, I understand why they would be interested in Odell.
Yeah, and you consider the free agent market for wide receivers coming up in 2019 and the 2019 draft class for wide receivers. It's not necessarily the deepest groups. So I think it makes a whole lot of sense if you're San Francisco to explore trade options to bring in a proven commodity at the wide receiver position, somebody that can be a difference maker. And when you factor in age, I don't know that there's a receiver out there that I would take in front of Odell Beckham. He's just been that good. Four of his first five seasons have been 1,000-yard reception seasons. Right. And of course, he missed the majority of last year with the ankle injury. So, I mean, it makes sense for the two sides to hear each other out, but ultimately I'm not sure that it ends up getting done.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, is Andrew Luck primed for a deep playoff run? We'll break that down next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, former NFL head coach Eric Mangini is here, and we missed you, Coach. It's
really
been a while.
Did.
Happy
Good
New
to
Year.
See you.
I'm
going
to
go two-handed
handshake.
Whoa.
Happy New Year.
I have not seen Nick this happy to see someone in a long time.
I miss Coach, man. It's been too long. I was texting him during the weekend. I missed him.
Good, yeah, I look you. Forward to his text.
I'm sure you did. Yeah. I'm sure you did. Not their best season, not their best Gronk, not their best Brady, still the two seed in the AFC. Is Brady showing signs of a decline at age 41? Maybe. But right now, Brady's in the driver's seat until he isn't anymore. And despite less than great stats, Pro Football Focus ranked him the fifth best quarterback in the NFL this season. All right, Coach, fifth best quarterback. Did everybody sort of give up on Brady a little too soon?
Well, who's giving up on him? Besides Nick, who's giving up on Tom Brady? And you look at what he's dealt with the whole season. They move on from their left tackle. They replace him with a guy that was a converted defensive lineman who's done a really great job.
You coached their left tackle, and you're shocked that he's a left tackle.
Look, he had a long way to go when I saw him. And he's done a great job for, you know, 1/30th of what Nate got in New York. So you do that. You lose your starting wide receiver. Gronk misses games. Edelman misses, the first four games. Danny Amendola goes to Miami. You've got all these things where Josh Gordon comes in and then he leaves. But nobody makes a big deal about it because Tom Brady is just going to handle whatever it is, as opposed to some quarterbacks who have had weapons the whole season long and they're a little bit more explosive or they seem more explosive. But if they had to deal with the issues that Tom's had to deal with in New England, they could never do that.
Listen, I've always thought the story of Tom Brady in New England is he's overcoming that awful organizational structure they have. He's always in that. I mean, he's got to deal. Forget the fact that he's got to deal with the gauntlet of the AFC East. You got the Bills and the Jets and the Dolphins. I don't know how he can get through And obviously Bill Belichick has failed him for, the 18th consecutive year. And the story of Brady is overcoming. Has everyone gone crazy? Obviously, Brady is the greatest quarterback ever, and he's still a very good quarterback. But there's no way to look at Brady this year compared to Brady last year, the league MVP, and not see significant deterioration. Even in that Jets game, you can't see him miss Chris Hogan in the middle of the end zone, open by 15 yards, could have drawn a circle around him, and see him sail the ball over his head and say, oh, Brady's entering a different phase of his career. Now, he's held off this phase longer than anyone we've ever seen. And it's one of the many reasons he's the greatest quarterback ever. But for Pro Football Focus, and I love those guys, to call him the fifth best quarterback in the league this year, that's laughable.
Wow, that's a little bit strong, don't you think? Okay. I mean, when you look at the quarterbacks that are rated ahead of him, you can make the argument that Tom Brady has had a higher degree of difficulty in terms of his team qualifying for the postseason and being the second seed in the AFC when you consider his supporting cast. He doesn't have the supporting cast that Drew Brees has, that Phillip Rivers has, or even Andrew Luck. He doesn't have that. So I think you have to factor in all the things that Coach is talking about in terms of Tom Brady offering them stability and being able to carry this team. Because I think that's exactly what he's done this season with all the different moving parts and guys in and out of the lineup.
And most times when I'm out here, if we're talking about any quarterback behind Brady and he's having a bad day or a bad week or a bad season, it's like he needs more help. Oh, my God, he needs more help. How can we get him more help?
Sure.
It's always about how we can – We never, ever, ever talk about that with Tom Brady. And so, yeah, he missed Hogan on one pass. So, obviously, the guy's done.
Well,
he missed a 15-yard completion. Like, if Patrick Mahomes has a hangnail, we got to cancel the game. But if Tom Brady loses his left tackle, his starting wide receiver, his second leading wide receiver, his third leading wide receiver, his tight end misses significant games, you know, who's pretty good, the sky is, it's over for
him. I understand. You're right that there are a lot of quarterbacks that Aaron Rodgers is an example, and Aaron Rodgers and Brady had very similar statistical seasons. And one of the stories with Rodgers was his coach failed him. They got rid of wide receivers. And Brady never makes excuses, and Brady never talks about that. And Brady, there have been times when Brady has had unbelievable weapons, and there's also been times like this year where he has somehow turned James White into a great threat, as he was 20 points scored in the Super Bowl against the Falcons. Like, but nobody questions any of that. But the idea that Brady has not played at a level lower than we've seen him play since the year coming off the ACL, that's just denied by all the evidence. The team's record says that. The fact that he is outside of the top 10 in every major passing category says that. And you, for pro football, I mean, I'll just start listing quarterbacks. Tell me when one that you thought Brady was better than this year. Mahomes, Breeze, Luck, Rivers, Watson, there's five. I'll add Russell Wilson. Now we're at six. We can keep going if you'd like. Aaron Rodgers, I said, was very close. Now we're at seven. Like, Matt Ryan, his team was terrible. He was great. Now we're at eight. Like, it's not a questioning how great the guy's been. But this year, you said it. I don't know if you meant to, but you said it. When a guy has a down year, we say it's the people around him. This is a down year for Brady. Now, can he channel it in the postseason? We'll see. But does anyone at this table think he's playing at the same level he played last year?
No, I don't think he's playing at the same level. But of all the quarterbacks that you just rattled off, those five or six guys, which one of those guys would you replace Tom Brady with and say that they would have the same record or better with Tom Brady being out? Like, I don't understand
this,
that.
You're saying this year's Patriots.
I'm talking about this year's Patriots with this team. Which one of those guys that
Breeze,
you talked
Mahomes,
about,
Locke,
you think that
Rivers,
they would have a better record
all
in
go
New England.
England and play better than Tom Brady played with that group? Like, if you swap quarterbacks, no. I think Tom would go to any one of those teams and have very similar numbers to what those guys had.
Wow. Okay. Then we'll just listen. I'm seeing, I thought everyone was seeing this, a quarterback who's not as mobile in the pocket anymore. A quarterback who
not a, what are you talking about? It's like saying we're seeing a snail that's
not
as fast.
No. When I said mobile in the pocket, I always thought one of Brady's biggest strengths was being able to step up in the pocket, navigate those 3 yards.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. But that's why I said mobility in the pocket, being able to step it away from a pass rush, never scrambling, not at all. I'm seeing a guy who a lot of times this year. What same thing we saw from Peyton in his second to last year, where he sacks himself, where he sees the rush coming and says, I'm not going to be able to get away from this. I'm going down. We're seeing a guy who is not at the same place as he's been, and that's what you're supposed to be at this point in his career. It's not sacrilege to say it. It's not unfair to say it. And to say that, it's not that he's 41. It's that it's everything else around him. It's that the Patriots knew they were going to lose those guys. And thought they'd be fine. They thought they had a new left tackle in the draft. I understand that. They'd spent the first round pick on their left tackle. I forget his name.
Isaiah Wynn out of Georgia.
And he didn't play for them this year. He got hurt preseason. I get that. And Josh Gordon, it's not like they were counting on Josh Gordon going into the year.
That Josh Gordon comes in. He's productive. And then he leaves. And it's barely even a story. He's their leading receiver. He's had an impact. He leaves and it's like, oh, yeah, of course they're going to win the next game.
That's a testament to the team and the infrastructure.
Well, all I'm saying is this. He's got 29 touchdowns and 11 interceptions, a near 3-to-1 touchdown-to-interception ratio. That's up there with the best in the game. And so if he's been able to have that level of consistency and productivity, given the guys that have been his supporting cast this season, I don't know how you say that Tom Brady isn't the clear player in the NFL that means the most to his team.
Because just real quick, it's not up there with the best in the NFL this year. This year, Matt Ryan's 5-1. Russell Wilson's 5-1. Aaron Rodgers is 13-1. Mahomes is 4-1. Breeze is 6-1.
Again, Nick, if you swap quarterbacks and you say that one of those guys has to go in New England with the same supporting cast, you can't definitively say that one of those guys is going to be better than what Tom Brady gave you this
year. All right.
You can't say that.
No, of course I can't definitively prove it. Nobody can prove a hypothetical. But I know anyone that has watched the football this year, and thinks Brady's playing at the same level as Andrew Luck, at the same level of Philip Rivers, forget Mahomes and Breeze, who are three standard deviations above where Brady's played this year. Like, we'll see it in this postseason. We're just all watching different things then. I can't convince you. I just know what I've seen with my eyes. Last year, he was as good as he's ever been. This year's the worst year he's had in a decade. It's not just that Gronk got old and they lost Danny Amendola. It's not, they didn't have Julian Edelman all of last year, right? And he was pretty damn good.
Will you come back for another segment?
Yeah. And I'm going to put those rose-colored glasses on.
Right, I don't
know.
Got to take a break. Coming up, did Dwayne Haskins just make himself the number one overall draft pick? Next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, we're going viral. Lamar Jackson will be the youngest quarterback in NFL history to start a playoff game Sunday when he faces off against the Chargers. Jazz guard Donovan Mitchell was seen wearing Lamar's jersey last night before his game. Donovan and Lamar, both in college at Louisville during the same time. Nice little tribute there.
Nice tip of the cap by Donovan Mitchell. I see you.
Nice jersey, nice jacket. Those Balenciaga shoes, though, they're better off lighting $1,400
nice
on fire, man.
Why would you say something like that?
Because he tweeted about the person who sent the tweet was talking about the shoes. I'm just saying those are, if those shoes.
They might not be your taste.
Man, if those shoes were $14, no one would buy them. Mm. They're $1,400, so people buy them. Like, those Balenciagas, man. And now everybody's making those big cloggy look. Not my thing. Okay. So I'm just saying.
So everybody go to Nick Wright for fashion sense.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. All right.
Style icon.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Style icon, which he can say because Chris Carter's not here.
Oh, he's just mad because he got a few pairs of that in the back of his Bentley. Can't hide.
I absolutely have a few pairs.
Yeah, I knew it.
All right, time for stories to start your morning. Big night for Kawhi last night. Kawhi Leonard dropping 45. That's a career high. That came against the Jazz. He went 16-22 from the field. He made 13 free throws. Nick, how impressive was Kawhi last night?
He was spectacular. I mean, he was great on both ends. It's really surprising. Only his third career 40-point game. But if he had played more games, he's missed 9 of their 39 games, he'd be a top three MVP guy right now. He's on a top three team in the league. He was great last night.
Is there any weakness in his game offensively? I mean, I guess you would look at perimeter shooting and being more consistent, but I don't think that's a weakness.
No, and he in his career, I think he's up to like 38% from three. Really just not a great distributor. One assist. This is a Kobe Bryant Memorial game. 45 points, one assist. He's not a great
They don't
passer.
Need him to facilitate for everybody else. They need him to get buckets.
He's been great. He's been so great as their number one option. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. Robinhood is a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Robinhood is simple and intuitive with a clear design that shows data presented in an easy-to-digest way. Here's why I recommend Robinhood. No commission fees. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. Trade stocks and keep all of your profits. It's simple, easy to understand charts and market data. Place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. Robinhood web platform also lets you view stock collections. Collections are like sectors, like entertainment, social media, curated categories like female CEOs, and analyst ratings of buy, hold, sell for every stock. You learn by doing it. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks and track favorite companies with personalized news feeds. Custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving our listeners a free stock, such as Apple, Ford, or Sprint, to help build your portfolio. Sign up at first.robinhood.com. That's first.robinhood.com.
Moving on to the Lakers now. LeBron has been ruled out for tonight's game against the Thunder. This will be the fourth game that he's missed since injuring his groin last week. Lakers 1-2 without the King so far. All right, Nick, how does this team look without LeBron?
Okay. They could be 2-1 without him, but they also could be 0-3 without him. They've had two kind of coin flip games. One of the losses was a clear loss. Tonight's going to be real tough against the Thunder. But then home for the Knicks. At the Timberwolves, at Dallas, they should be able to go 2-2 over the next four. And then I would think you'd have LeBron back after seven games missed. That's the thing to watch. This is going to be 3 to 5 games, 5 to 8 games, 8+ games. I think he'll probably be back around game 8.
Well, they're only 4 games back from the leader of the West, the Denver Nuggets. So you just need these guys to keep them above water, stay afloat, you know, 500, maybe a game or two better than that until LeBron James comes back. But this is one of those injuries that you can't rush.
You don't want to rush.
When you have a groin situation, give him as much time as he needs to recover from it. We haven't even gotten to the All-Star break, so give LeBron James some time.
Last night, Urban Meyer coached his last game for Ohio State in their Rose Bowl win over Washington. Quarterback Dwayne Haskins put on a show, tossed 3 touchdowns. He threw for 251 yards. Our own Chris Carter was there. He tweeted that he's certain Haskins is heading to the NFL. Chris Caney, what do you make of Haskins' performance yesterday?
Well, CC said a couple of months ago that he thought Dwayne Haskins would be the best quarterback available should he choose to come out in the NFL draft. And I think from that Rose Bowl performance from Haskins, he's only solidified that position. I mean, he will be the best quarterback in this year's draft class, in my opinion, probably going to be the number one overall pick. The team that's drafting number one, the Arizona Cardinals, they just drafted Josh Rosen last year, so they're not going to be in the quarterback market, but I do anticipate a heavy market to trade up to that number one pick to be able to get Haskins.
And the Cardinals need a ton of players, and so you think they might be a team you would think that would trade back to try to accumulate extra picks. Haskins, clear-cut number one quarterback, and what a rise for him. Starting with he was spectacular against Maryland, unreal against Michigan in that pasting, and then the Big Ten Championship game and the Rose Bowl. Maybe the 4 best games of his college career all came in the final 4 games of his college career. That's what solidified him as the top quarterback available if he comes out.
All right, let's talk some Andrew Luck. He'll face the Texans on Saturday for the 3rd time this season. I'm sure the Colts will be there as well. Safe to say, Luck fared pretty well in the first 2 matchups against Houston, throwing for over 800 yards and 6 touchdowns. However, Luck is tempering expectations this time around.
I truly believe this. What's happened in the past has no relevance over what's going to happen, you know, in the next game. And certainly, you watch film and you study and you prepare and we know each other well. Execution, fundamentals, technique, discipline, those sort of become the magic sauce. Honestly, those are the magic sauce every week.
All right, Colts and Texans, these two teams know each other very well. Chris Caney, what do you think the key is to this matchup?
Well, and just listening to that soundbite from Andrew Luck, he said what happened in the past has no bearing on what's going to happen in this game. And while that may be true, I think past performance is the best indicator for future performance. And what we know is that Andrew Luck torches the Houston Texans, and so does T.Y. Hilton. So I think this is a good matchup for the Colts. This is a division opponent, so they know this team very well. They know that environment that they're walking into down in Houston well. And there's not going to be an intimidation factor. There's not going to be a fear factor. And the one thing that the Colts have done really well this year is keep Andrew Luck upright. Now, they've been able to offer him some balance of a running game. Think back a few weeks ago in that matchup against the Dallas Cowboys, which is a pretty good front seven, and they gashed those guys for over 170 yards in the run game. So I look at this Colts team and say, if they can have that kind of balance on offense and have Andrew Luck work off of the run game with play action and take shots downfield to Ebron and T.Y. Hilton, it could be a long day for that Houston Texans pass defense.
Texans are devastated that the Titans didn't win that game a couple nights ago.
But they probably knew it wasn't coming. Marcus Mariota compromised.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, they knew it was coming.
But this is a terrible matchup for Houston. Because not only the history, not only do they know each other, not only that this year in 2 games against Houston, Luck has averaged 430 yards passing, 6 touchdowns, 1 pick. The Texans' biggest weakness, other than their offensive line, is their pass defense. And Andrew Luck, aside from about the one throw a game he makes that you're like, what were you thinking there? He is going to carve up weak pass defenses, which is what the Texans have. Additionally, the Colts have been great at keeping Luck upright. Think about this. He's been sacked 18 times all year. Deshaun Watson was sacked 12 times in the 2 games against Indy. Wow. And that is indicative of the season. How many times has he been sacked on the season, Canny?
Deshaun Watson. 62 times.
62 times. The most any player's been sacked in this league, I believe, in 10 years. And one of the most ever. The most ever is a different Houston Texan young quarterback, David Carr, who got the football, as you would say, knocked out of him. If you were to tell me only one road team's going to win this weekend, I think a couple could win. But if only one road team's going to win, this would be my pick.
Not favored, by the way, the Colts.
They're not favored, but the line's getting shorter and shorter as the week goes on. Started as Texans by 3. It's now Texans by 2, 1.5 in some spots. I think the Colts are better. I think the Colts are better. I think, obviously, Houston will have home field. but it's indoors, so there's not going to be any weather variable. And while the Texans are very hot, going from 0-3 to 11-5, Colts are even hotter, going from 1-5 to 10-6, having won 9 of 10 with the one loss being just a head-scratching game against Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. I just think Colts are better. I think they're a more dangerous team. I think they're the more complete team. They have more paths to victory, to your point. To me, the Texans have one path to victory. That is, DeAndre Hopkins has a monster game, but if I'm Indy, I'm doubling him on every single play, and I'm seeing if anyone else can beat me.
Well, I was going to say, the Colts have one more thing, and that's that their best player is playing their best football, and that's Andrew Luck. I mean, as hot as he is, he's healthy, he's staying upright, he's more accurate, he's happy, he's excited about this. We've seen, like, a new Andrew Luck this season, just a guy that is so appreciative of having this second lease. And his line is protecting him, which makes you feel comfortable going into this game.
No, you're absolutely right, and I think that's where it starts and ends for me. In the playoffs, it's about the team that plays the overall more physical brand of football, and I think that's the Indianapolis Colts, especially in the month of December, as opposed to the Houston Texans. And I know everybody will talk about Watt, they'll talk about Clowney, Bernardrick McKinney, but when you look at this Colts team, both offensively and defensively, up front, I think those groups have been more consistent throughout the entire season, and that's what's going to be at play in this playoff game this weekend. So when you consider the fact that the offensive line for the Houston Texans has allowed that much pressure on Deshaun Watson, and then you realize that over a third of his attempts are to DeAndre Hopkins, I mean, to Nick's point, the Colts secondary, they're going to take DeAndre Hopkins away. Then who's going to beat you from that Texans offense? I mean, the Colts haven't allowed a 100-yard rusher all season, so you have to think that somebody else is going to be forced to step up, and I don't know that the supporting cast for Deshaun Watson is capable of doing that.
Will Fuller was an excellent speed threat for them. He got hurt. They brought in Demaryius Thomas. He got hurt. Kiki QT, who's been a nice rookie for them, he had been injured. He was, I think, a full participant at practice yesterday, so he should be a full go this weekend. But if you're down to Kiki QT is your secondary option, you don't have great secondary options.
Yeah.
And for the Colts, people need to understand how great they've been in this stretch. It's not just that over the last 10 weeks, they have the best record in the NFL. They have the best point differential in the NFL. They have the number one scoring defense in the NFL over this stretch. Number five scoring offense. This team, over these 10 weeks, has been as good as the Saints, as good as the Chiefs, as good as any of the best teams in football. The Colts have been right there with them. It's a really tough matchup for Houston. I'd be surprised if the Texans win this game. I think the Colts are better. I think the Colts are going to win.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.